You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, and we are here with a very special guest. We are here with Julia Kugel, a.k.a. Julia Coathanger, a.k.a. Crooked Kid Coathanger, a.k.a. Julia. And we're going to kick it off with Julia's brand new track off her upcoming album. The new album is called Derealization, and the new single is called something very cool. It is called a track that I am pulling up right now, Fever in My Heart. Let's play that, and we'll be back with Julia. And we're back, and first of all, Enmore's here. Enmore, what's happening?
Hello. Staying awake. That is what's happening.
Enmore, doing well. How do you believe, on a scale of 1 to 10, how sleepy are you? Well, first of all, how could you be sleepy with Julia on the podcast? I'm at like 147 out of 10. Where are you at, Hallie Bullet?
I'm not sleepy. I went out to dinner. I've had some ice cream. I'm having a little sugar, a little help from some sugar. I'm feeling good. And Julia's here.
And we are here with Julia Kugel. Julia, what's happening? How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. I'm on the West Coast. I don't know. I'm not sleepy. I guess we're on different time schedules over here.
Well, I'm sure the listeners know, but Julia is in the Coathangers, and she's got a brand new, I don't want to say, she's got a new record coming out. It's built under the name Julie Julia. And listen, people, I know everyone knows the Coat Hangers are great, but I saw the Coat Hangers at Underground Arts where they had on like cloaks and they played songs from The Devil You Know. It was crazy. I saw them at this weird show at the Electric Factory in Philadelphia where they played at like 3 p.m. and it was some beer fest. And I was like headbanging the whole show. And Julie jumped off the stage. And while they were doing Squeaky Tiki, she hit me on the shoulder as she said, "I like it." Because I think she was gesturing that she dug, that I dug the set. Made me feel 10 feet tall. I saw the Coat Hangers down at the Baltimore Metro where they just straight up destroyed the set during the Nosebleed Weekend Tour. And I saw them at Punk Rock Bowling where they came out for 25-minute set. And the crowd was basically a Fat Records type crowd. And I don't know if they all knew the Coat Hangers or not. And Julie got up there and she said, "Hi, we're the Coat Hangers from Atlanta, Georgia." And they just smashed through a 25-minute nonstop set. The crowd was blown away. Their jaws dropped. I think it was Julia crowd surfed, or I think it, you yes. jumped out, right? Yes. And honestly, like, the only proof that you, I mean, listen, the only proof that you need for the Coat Hangers are great and that Julie is great are all the different recordings they've done. But if you can find that set on YouTube, or if you were there, you know that the Coat Hangers are great and Julie is great. So, Julia, thanks for being on our show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And so, you know, with these kinds of things is they usually ask like the easy peasy questions first and then like end on the heavy stuff. And it's always like, "Oh, that song was about my grandma that I love that died 3 years ago by my latest album." So we're not going to do that today. We're going to start with the heavy stuff and then end on the light stuff. How about that? So that way, so listen, the new album is called Derealization. What is Derealization and why is that the central theme to the record?
I think we can all share in the experience of like 2020 and beyond of like really feeling out of like reality, kind of not knowing what reality is. I think also with the influx of social media, which I just had to get on, you know, recently, at least like 3 years back, I think there's like this disconnection from like real world and this other world, but now they like coexist. And there's so many, I mean, you know, I toured for 15 years. Okay. So this is like the first time I ever spent time at home. This is the first time I haven't been moving, because of COVID, the shutdown. And I just like, it was crazy to me. I really felt like, you know, like that Zoolander part where they're like, "Who am I? What is real? What is real?" Because when you're on tour, you often say like, "Oh, I got to go back to real life, which is home." But then you don't really actually realize that what you're doing is living a real life out there on the road. So it's kind of that. It's like feeling like you're living in a dream state. And I, to be honest with you, I went through a really hard time and I like lost my voice and I was doing like YouTube tutorials to try to figure out how to reclaim my voice. And it was, I think, quite psychological. It wasn't like a trauma that I had to my voice. So it was like moving through this space of like being very sad, lost, confused, you know, traumatized by life events and things. I think we're all going through something. So I think everyone would be able to relate to it. Plus, so I was trying to figure out like a word that kind of sums that up. And I was, I'm really interested in psychology and whatnot. So this is an actual psychological like syndrome, derealization, where you like don't know if you're living in reality. So that was a good start.
You said that you were going through a tough time. Was that because you couldn't get out on the road, or because you didn't want to go back out on the road, or you were losing your identity because you didn't know who you were? Like, what was the cause of the tough time?
I was like, to be honest with you, really happy not to be out on the road. I think for me, it was a very difficult thing to constantly do. It in some ways it allows you to grow and flourish, and in some ways it really stunts your growth, because you are kind of just out drinking all the time and doing it's the same thing that you've been doing for 15 years. So it's like, I was very happy to finally have time off the road to see who I was. I compartmentalized a lot of myself, like, this is Coat Hangers Julia, and this is, you know, solo Julia, and this is this Julia, and this is home Julia and this is tour Julia. And it was like, I think they all kind of crashed in on me together. And I was like, you know, again, who am I? What is it? What does it really mean? What's important? Because again, touring and being in this industry is, it can really, fuck you up. I don't know if you're allowed to curse on your podcast, but it really can.
Sure. Go for it.
So yeah, I just recently kind of started missing playing shows or being out and connecting with people. I felt like I had a lot of connection for a long time, and I really kind of wanted to hibernate and to like hide a bit. I wanted to hide.
Yeah.
So how you feel? How are you feeling now? Are you feeling like in a better spot now, or yeah, spiraling down even more?
Yeah. Well, I started surfing, like, which is like you're just fighting for your life all the whole time. So that was really good at like grounding me. I got trauma therapy. It's called EMDR, and I highly recommend it if anyone really is dealing with acute trauma. It's like they do like light therapy, basically a stimulation of both sides of your brain so you can take trauma and process it in your frontal cortex. I am like a huge proponent of this treatment, and I think if anyone has EMDR, Google it. It's really wonderful, and there's therapists all over the place. And then writing this record, to be honest, like I shut myself in the studio and I wanted to do all of it on my own. I wanted to test where I was at. You know, I played the drums, I played the bass. I realized I really like collaborating with people. But like, to me, that I needed that. I needed to go through that process of being like me, you know, again, like, you can't bother me. I'm by myself here. And then I got to get all this stuff out. I had a lot of stuff that I was holding in, and I needed to get it out in some kind of positive way. And yeah. And then now I'm here and I'm like, I'm really stoked. I don't think I would have even been able to say any of the things that I just said like a year ago. It was too much. It was probably
I've got a million questions for Julia, but I'm gonna hit her with two, and then maybe Hallie or Em will have some, and then I'll have some more. So Julia, the new video is super cool and super trippy, and it's got like multiple of your faces like interacting with each other on top of like a black water, you know. You mentioned surfing. Oh, and actually one thing I love about your solo stuff and Code Hangers is there's always an intelligence, but there's always an edge to it. I love how there's always a certain danger or a darkness or something that's like, this is like serious biz. You know, it's never just a throwaway. But my point is with the video, and maybe you don't want to go into it, but does the video have some sort of symbolic meaning, or is it abstract and we should take it as we view it? Just so the listeners know, the video is real cool. It's got Julia's like face like reflecting off water sometimes in three or even four spots, and the faces interact with each other, and it's super trippy, and I've never taken acid, but I feel like I'm on acid when I'm watching it. So Julia, the video, tell me about the video for the new track.
Well, to be honest with you, everything I do is intentional, and I put meaning in everything, and like the colors, and some people don't want to know, but I do. It's like, for me, it's very, very important. So yeah, it's about like losing your mind. It's like, you know, a bunch of me. That was what I was feeling when I was, and I say even the lyrics are, am I somebody else? Am I losing myself? You know, like that's exactly how I was feeling. And actually, so it was shot by Lauren Alvarez, who's a wonderful photographer. And then it was edited by my husband, Scott. And he does a lot of these practical effects. And actually he was, well, I'm not gonna go into it, but like we edited together, and so that's why we layered all these and all the different voices. You know, it's a very layered song, and it's like something I love to do, is just layer vocals on top. And it was like all these people, and one of them's actually screaming, so it's kind of like, oh yeah, I'm like, okay, I'm okay. And it's like the other one's like, I'm not okay. It's like, you know, I really wanted the video, because it's just like my head, basically. It's like, that's how I was in my head. It's about losing your mind. And when I was going through that, I kind of like was enjoying it because it was so otherworldly. And I felt like my senses were really heightened and I felt like I could feel everything. And, you know, you start tripping out and you get heart palpitations. You're like, oh, you know, it's my dead grandmother talking to me. You know, you kind of like, I'm kind of like a little nuts. But in ways, like I allowed myself to just experience those things and assign meaning. So, yeah, the video is very reflective of the song. I was very happy the way it turned out.
The video is real cool. I like how you have a concrete explanation, but I also like how the viewer really could bend it in a lot of different ways. So I think that's kind of neat. I'm going to ask you a cliche question I've asked probably the last four or five people we've had on. I know Hallie and Em are sick of me asking this question, but I've only gotten a satisfactory answer to this question once. I disagree with the answer almost every single artist has given me, and I don't believe them. But I'm going to answer you this question. So, you know, like James Brown gets up on stage, I'm the greatest, I'm James Brown. You know, KRS-One gets up on stage, I'm the greatest, I'm KRS-One. I see Julia on stage with the Coat Hangers, and I'm like, God damn, this band is awesome. You know, Julie's up there singing, squeezing the you know, the little dog toy thing, looking like, you know, looking boss, you know. When you're up on stage, when you wake up in the morning, you're like, God damn, I'm Julia Kugel of the Coat Hangers, I rock. Or do you not feel like you're like totally killing it? Like, how do you feel as though, how do you feel as to your own accomplishments? Do you feel like you're dominating, or do you feel as though it's, quote, up to the fans, which I never buy that answer. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, this might not be, like, the right thing to say, but I don't really do anything for the fans. I don't assume that there are fans. I have always kind of, like, done it for myself. And even on stage, and people have been like, oh, you gotta... If I interact, if I do something, it's because I want to. Like, I don't have like a set thing that I kick at this point and then a point at this point, you know, like, and I, you know, I don't always touch people on the shoulder. Sometimes I just hit them on the head, you know, like it's in the moment. And sometimes on stage you feel like a badass and that you're killing it. And sometimes you don't, but waking up, I'm just, I'm grateful for waking up. And I've had a lot of like random people at like, you know, toll booths say profound things to me, you know, like, honey, every day you wake up is a great day, you know? And like, I kind of like take that stuff to heart. I'm from Belarus, which is, former Soviet Union. The war in Ukraine is very personal to me. That's where my family is, in Russia and Ukraine and Belarus. Every day that we're not experiencing war and trauma like that is a great fucking day. So as far as my accomplishments go, I'm happy and I'm satisfied that I have finished things. That's a really good accomplishment. If people love it and people feel, you know, feel it, whether it's my angry self or whatever, my soft self, that's great. But not to alienate, I love people and all, but it's not necessarily for them.
Now, Hallie Blitt, that's a satisfactory answer. That's the answer that I want. Hallie Blitt, you got any questions for Julia?
I do. I mean, so many, but I'm wondering, I have two questions, and one is, I just was wondering if you would reflect on, like, does it feel different to be in an all female band now in 2022, with the music scene being what it is, from how it felt when you guys started? Also, let me just add to that, I love how long you've been playing together. And I think it's really special that you've continued to want to work on the same project and you've continued to put out really consistently, like just quality. I don't know. I like it, but I'm wondering if it just playing in a band with women, does it feel any different now than it did back then?
It maybe felt a little bit more, unusual, like maybe a little bit more tokeny back then, because we started in 2006, so this is quite a And like, you know, every festival we played, we were the only women, especially like in Europe. And there wasn't like just a lot of diversity until people started kind of demanding it. So I think that is beautiful to see, and people taking the opportunities and bending them in whatever ways they want to express themselves. Yeah, I never wanted to be a token person of any kind for any reason. So that was kind of bothersome, and it was always discussed. But I do think that talking and communicating is what does break boundaries and barriers. So, I think it's different, but you know, I'm not out there on the road right now. I just think that like, there's more respect, and there's like people like Phoebe Bridgers, and you know, people just like, yeah, just, you know, and it feels good. And there's headliners of festivals like that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there's been like a long, hard fought battle for that. And it seems like it's happening. Simultaneously, we are getting basic human rights taken away from us. So it just feels so odd.
Yeah, that actually kind of, well, actually that leads really into my second question for you, which I want to just like kick down the road a little bit, because now actually just having heard what you just said, I'm wondering, do you take some pride in that? Do you feel like by having been around and by having played music and getting up on stage for young women, like do you, when you see that there are so many more women now, is there some piece of you that's like, oh, I think I was a part of that. Like, I think I maybe, you know, helped be a role model to some younger women to play an instrument or to just start a band with their friends or, you know?
Yeah. You know, yeah. I, in some small way, yeah, I think that we were just like a step for that. I think we were part of the movement, you know, whatever they were calling it at that point, the second coming of the Riot Girl or whatever. They're always, you know, trying to reference Riot Girl all the time, but really it's just
girls playing music. It must have to do with Riot Girls.
It doesn't have to be like, just so everyone just needs a package. Everyone needs it to fit into something. And it just is. And so I always felt like I needed to be a role model. I think it's part of what kind of made me kind of trip out a bit and lose it, because that's not very healthy either, to have to be, you know, but I felt it. I studied, and then women and girls would come up and say, and like even in bands now, would be like, here, that I saw you and you guys just didn't give a fuck and you inspired me. And that's what I want. I want, like, that's the biggest compliment to any of us is like, yeah, because that's just for yourself. Like, just play an instrument, do something, and like take that energy and put in something positive. And so yeah, I hope I don't sound cocky or anything, but I just feel like the people that are doing well now, like I've had conversations with them where they're like, yeah, you guys were just so rad, you know? And we always just wanted to play just like people. We just wanted to be humans, you know, playing music. We didn't necessarily want to be like role models, but like in some way we knew we were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't think you sound like cocky at all. Like I was, you know, I see you guys as being like a real step in what you're saying, that just that slow process of getting more women into the scene. So I'm glad that you are able to like acknowledge that personally. No, so but you were talking about rights, and that's my only other question for you. And I don't want to drag you too far into politics if that's not what you want to talk about. But I am wondering, does it feel different to be in a band called the Coat Hangers today?
Yeah.
Does it feel different than it did, you know, even 6 months ago?
Well, we, you know, we formed like going to an anti-Bush rally. Like that's we were always, and we did that name on purpose, you know. And our, I think Steph's mom was like, "Is it because you like clothes?" And we were like, "Yeah." Totally.
Her mom.
Yeah, but you know, it was kind of like we felt like we were in a fight for respect even then, even though and it was always teetering right there, like, oh, Virginia is gonna limit this and this one's gonna limit that. So we've always like worked with Planned Parenthood and, you know, done things to just promote like community and support and yeah, what happened? How, I mean, we can go back and say who didn't appoint or retire, whatever. Like we can go, like we know what happened, but like what the fuck really happened? Like I was, for days, it was like this, it felt dangerous again to be a woman.
Yes.
Or, you know, it felt like dangerous. Like,
yes,
I was wearing more clothes, you know, I was like, and then I was like, okay, wait, I live in California. So what I can do is just be a drug mule. I can like assist. I can like, you know, that's what I can do when shit gets tough. You gotta like not freak out. You gotta like fucking do something. So, so that's where I am right now, is like, okay, well, what needs to be done? What can I do? Like, we can raise money, we can raise awareness, we can help people to get to a state that will help them, you know, like, this shit is really, really real. And it's so shocking. It's just shocking. America, I'm an immigrant, I'm a refugee. Everyone comes here with this dream where like, anything's possible here, to see it, rights get taken away. Like that's very rare and very unusual. And it feels like we should, maybe it's the, this is so stupid because I hated this, but maybe it is the wake up call we needed to like really be active, like in the government. It's just so big. It's like the problem is so big. I can't, you know, we could probably discuss this for hours and hours and hours, but in the end, it's like the personal is the political. The person, what you do personally is the political statement. And I learned that in my women's studies classes, you know, it's like, so it's not, I can't change what they do, but I can change what I do. And I can change how I treat people. And if someone, this is very, very important, I think, if someone disagrees, it's an opportunity to speak with them. Speak with them and not just shut them out as like, it's enemy of the state. Like I've had this with even just being a female in music. I've had people come up to me and this they meant as a compliment. And they said, when I first met you, I just thought you were some chick. But like your band is really great. I like don't want to do that. I don't want to like judge people like that anymore. And I said, wow, you should probably just journal that. you shouldn't be saying that shit out loud. You dumbass.
Good for you. Yeah.
Growth is great, you know, and like, and because there's just so much of this, and that's very, 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 very dangerous. It's you're either for us or against this thing. It's like tempting because we're all so angry and scared. We're angry because we're scared.
Yeah,
you know, that's like how that's natural for animals to you know, one is just do what you can, help what you can, vote for judges, like small community voting things, and then just try to talk to people, I guess. I don't know, you know, just fucked.
Yeah, it was I found it interesting just when John told us that we were interviewing you and I read your band name. I think like as a fan, I used to see your band name and I obviously can't speak for anyone else, but for me, the name, be, because I felt like it was referencing a situation that women used to be in.
Yeah.
I found it a little, the name was like kind of retro
yeah.
and referring back to something that used to be a yeah. concern. And it was just, it was really interesting to me to like read John's email and see what we were talking to you and to read your band name again. And it really, for me, it just like, it somehow it made it like more immediate, more. And I liked the name before and I like it now, but it really, it shifted for yeah. me, even just how I don't know, just how I see it. Just because of how the world's changed around us. Again, like you're saying, where you're just like, how could this?
I hope it's not like, at this point, like triggering to people or anything like that, because at one point at punk shows, women were called coat hangers because they held the coats. So mm-hmm. there is also that, you know, there's like just, and then it goes to that just being the carrier.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really a fan of that. You know, there's the concept. Yeah. And we've always had to fight. Women are, I guess we're just so powerful.
Yeah.
That they have to just shackle us down in any way they can, whether it's through media or through politics or whatever. We just always have to fight. And, you know, I guess that's what we have to do.
Yeah.
That's what, like, who says you're just supposed to just like chill out, eat fucking Pizza Hut all the time? That's not a life. Life is, you know, the Buddhists say life is suffering. And so like that, this is it. This, we need challenges and we need hope. You know, I wish it wasn't this. I wish, I really do, not to like downplay the severity of the situation, but like, we need to just be active. We can't be lazy. And I think like sometimes we all feel like that's what we ought to be doing. It's just chilling all the time, you know? And, everyone needs to just work.
Yeah.
Because they're working. They were organizing.
This whole time, right? While we were asleep at the wheel.
We were celebrating and they were organizing. They were in their churches and they were in their groups and they were mobilizing. And it caught us off guard. Our team wasn't prepared for their fucking move. It's dirty. And so now we got to be like, fuck. We can't play like that clean, man. They don't use logic. They don't use like the rules. I don't fucking care. They're just going in there saying, "Nope, I'm gonna whatever. Whoa, yo, say no to me." It's like, whoa, no, someone's gotta say no. And I'm like really stoked on the hearings. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm just like, some part of me is like, dude, we all knew this, but think. People, I mean, I'm like just grateful for hearing it, just to hear it, like some fucking truth. Everything's a goddamn lie. Everything is a lie. Everything has been such a lie. Oh, and I feel like people were tricked. I feel like I know personally intelligent people that say the dumbest shit now. And you're like, how did you even get here? And then you have to take a breath. Okay, namaste. Namaste and shit. See the two sides of you coming out. It's like, yeah.
I love it.
Piece of shit. And then it's like,
no. I love it. Thank you for your candor. Yeah.
And did you have any questions or did you want me to lighten the mood? We were like, we're going to start heavy and go light, and the whole thing's been like, and this is why the world's going to hell, and we need to fight hard. Anyways, Emory, you have a question,
Julie,
or do you want me to hit Julie with my three easy breezy close up wrap up questions?
I'll ask one thing, and then you go for it. It's not like super heavy, but because the whole what you mentioned with your first single, going back to that. The feeling of losing yourself and being lost. What do you think what would you say to someone who feels like they're losing themselves like right now? What's the one piece of advice you could give them?
surf. I don't know. I think like physical activity is actually really, really helpful in like dealing with mental over. I think that if you are only just looking at your phone or living in that world, that it takes so much mental. Your brain uses, like, when you're really using it, uses like 60% of your energy. So like you need to get off of that and go in some real world and like sweat it out, like work it out, like some way. And then I hope that someone, like, email me. I don't know. Email me and like I'll help you, because someone needs to just be there to like be that like beacon that says it's going to be okay. This is natural. We all feel this way. None of the shit you see on Instagram is real. Everyone is just as fucked up as you are. Everyone doesn't know who the hell they are, and everyone's trying to figure it out. So just know that we're all in the same boat. I hope that's comforting, because I think what we do is we think other people have it figured out. No one has it figured out. Like, the people in charge, they just like fell into those positions, I feel like. Like, the more people I meet that are in charge, how did you get this job? So like, I know I'm just going off on a tangent, but I think it's just like, just knowing that you're not alone, and try doing something physical and write, just journal something down, like figure out who you are by like writing your thoughts and rereading it, because then you're like looking at yourself from another self. I think that's really important to do. I do that through song. I like sometimes don't even know. I think I'm being so like poetic, but it's blatantly obvious to me later when I go back and read it that I was going through something painful and I wrote it out, you know? So those are the three things. Email me. Go do some exercise, anything, a walk, a run, whatever, and then write it down. Write stuff. Just write it, burn it, whatever. You don't have to like let anyone else see it, but it's for you. You've got to focus on you. And you'll find it. You won't be lost anymore.
Good question and great answer, Julia. Julie, just a couple last questions. Coat Hangers backed Debbie Harry for a song at like a fashion event. Was that rad as hell, or was that ultra rad as hell?
I might cry just talking about it. Like, what the fuck? How did this happen? We like got called up. She's the coolest. Like, you meet celebrities or you meet your idols, and you know, they're just people. But she's like the coolest person. She smells so good. She's like walking in with the sunglasses, just being super cool. And then she goes, I like what you guys, because we did like a bunch of Blondie songs, and then she came out for the finale and sang with us. And in my dreams, as like I knew, I would like just picture her looking over at me and smiling because we were doing a duet. And that happened at the show. Oh, she like looked over at me. Oh my God, oh my dreams have come true. It was amazing. And that's actually the last show we played. It was February of 2020. And I mean, seriously, she was like, oh, I like what you guys did with the arrangements. I was like, what? Shut up, that's so cool.
So
she's
awesome.
So great. And it was so great. And it was just beyond, I think it's, so it was like surreal. Anna Wintour was like the Vogue person was like sitting right there. I'm like, fuck! How did we get here? These women from Georgia, Atlanta. This happens to LA people. You know what I mean? Like, this, it was phenomenal. That is such a high. That you can always ask me about that. It's so good.
You mentioned that was the last Coat Hangers performance. Coat Hangers, are we on hiatus? Are we active? Are we TBD? Where are we at with the Coat Hangers?
We're just chilling. I mean, everyone's got their own projects, and you know, it's still coming in waves. One of us is immunocompromised, so it's not really good. We had like a New Year's shows planned, like we always do, and then just no one felt comfortable, and that was good because there was another surge right after that, and it's just not worth the risk at this point until things work out. So, and again, like I mentioned, 15 years of touring is like, it's cool. I'm good. Like, you know, I'm getting to explore other sides and play with other people. And, you know, like I don't know if this sounds whatever, but like I painted with like primary colors, bold primary colors for so long. And now I'm like using pastels and charcoals, you know? And it's like, just as the artist in me, I do feel like there's growth. But there's no like, it's just circumstantial. Like that's what's happening. Like I'm still stoked on everything we've ever made. It was an amazing journey. Amazing.
Well, the circumstances have led us to a very cool new single, which we played at the beginning of the show, Fever in My Heart. That is off Julia Julia's new album, out September 30, 2022, with the trippy title, which I dig, Derealization. So we played the single at the beginning of the show. Right now we're going to play Coat Hanger's track, and Julia's going to stick around for the news. Let's play Captain's Dead off the Bulletproof Coat Hanger's EP. Bulletproof EP, Captain's Dead, and we'll be right back.
I know we had a good time. I know it was a good ride. And I'll see you on the other side. Yeah, I'll see you on the other side. Captain of a Dixie Cup. You thought you had it all, but you made it up. I'm feeling seasick. I can't believe it. You're out on a treasure hunt.
Story is close to my heart. We're talking about the Dead Kennedys 2022 remix reissue of Fresh Fruit and Rotting Vegetables. As, of course, the listeners surely know, these days the Dead Kennedys are East Bay Ray, Klaus Fluoride, D.H. Peligro, who isn't even on Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables, and singer Skip McSkipster. And from a legal standpoint, Jello is still a Dead Kennedy, but band-wise, he's not. That is, he gets a 1/4 vote in the moves that the band, the Dead Kennedys, make. And, of course, the other three always vote together, so Jello's vote... The other three always vote together, so essentially the other three always make all the shots for DKs. And so the other three, Klaus, East Bay Ray, and DH, are re-releasing Fresh Fruit in a radically remixed version. The new version is remixed by Chris Lorge-Alge, who is a super famous pop producer. And they've re-released one of the remixes so far, Chemical Warfare, and the rest are coming out in September. Jello, of course, is very unhappy about that, and he released a statement. And I'm going to read the whole statement just because I think it's worth reading. And I'm going to read the first two or three sentences in my faux Jello voice because I love Jello and I love the way he speaks. But I'm not going to read the whole thing as Jello because that would be really annoying to you all. But so this is Jello's statement. People are asking, so I guess I'll have to say something. Listen before you buy. This was done almost totally behind my back, intentionally. It was not overseen by the band as the press release claims. I was definitely locked out. Not one person from the band or the labels reached out to me at all, nor did Chris Lorge-Alge, who did the remix. I guess he didn't care or value anything I brought to the band at all. Without me, those songs wouldn't exist. In fact, it took several letters from a lawyer for their manager, Kevin Raleigh, to cough up as much detail as to what they were up to. So, is it really adding depth without losing any of its original energy? Not to my ears. Sure, some people may like this version a little bit better, depending on taste, but incredible new clarity, taking the music from 2D to 3D? I don't think so. What does that even mean? I hate to say it, but to me it's, well, kind of boring. Sure, the sound is a little fuller, a little warmer, with a little more bottom end, but the top end presence and power, so crucial to full-on in-your-face punk, sounds rolled off and smoothed over, even muffly. And East Bay Ray, whose ego knows no bounds, actually turned his guitars down. They're lower and a little muddier than the real thing. It just sounds weak to me. I'm sorry. And why was Chris Lorge-Alge chosen in the first place? Sure, he's big-time Hollywood, as big as it gets, but there's so many others with a better, more heartfelt guess of what the Dead Kennedys really is, who I think could have done a better job. Al Jurgensen of Ministry and Gaze the Expo told me they'd love to do it. Who did Turbo Negro's Apocalypse Dudes? That would have been amazing. Matt Bales, Andy Wallace, anyone. Hell, I could have hooked up one of my ace engineering partners, Matt Shelley, Kurt Scheigel, Toshi Kasai of the Melvins, or Geza, and done a better job for myself for a fraction of the cost. They spent at least three times more money on Lorge-Alge than it cost to make the original album. Does that make it sound three times more better than the original? Again, listen before you buy. Yes, Lorge-Alge has mixed a remix Springsteen, Madonna, Celine Dion, The Stones, Linkin Park, Donny Osmond, the Jonas Brothers, even Rascal Flatts. A closet full of Grammy Awards and pants on some serious studio gear. Major pop punk too. Bad Religion, Green Day, Good Charlotte, Sum 41, and our favorite OG punk pioneer, Avril Lavigne. But Dead Kennedys? Why? Because Raleigh and Lorge-Alge brothers go way back to Cleveland. I admit I had thoughts about remixing Fresh Fruit too, way back when. Catch up to Frankenchrist and maybe Plastic Surgery Disasters. Then Tim from Operation Ivy asked me what I thought of the now classic album he gave me, Hot Off the Presses. I said I thought it came out a little tinny. It's funny that, like, this is why I love Jello. Tim Armstrong says to Jello, "Jello, what do you think of this new album we spent really hard working on?" And Jello's response is, "It sounds a little tinny to me." And so so it sounds like Fresh Fruit. He looked up to me in the eye and said, "Wait, we like Fresh Fruit. Thank you, Tim Armstrong. Lesson learned. Don't mess with the magic, especially when it means that much to people. Hell, if you really want a true remix of the album, don't do a faithful near carbon copy of the original. Go all the way. Get Jurgensen or Charlie Klaus or anyone from Rob Zombie or White Zombie to remix the albums. Or better yet, get a top interested hip hop person or even electronic people and really go to town. That's the true art of the remix to me. Slice, dice, and add your own beat to make it into something fresh and different." And then let's see here.
Really long statement, John.
All right. You guys get the idea. That's Jello. First of all, honestly, it seemed like Jello took more heat than everyone else. I can't. First of all, I think the remix sounds really bad. I think the original sounds great. I never even thought anyone thought it did sound bad. Like Fresh Fruit to me is like a classic album. I just re-listened to it. And it sounds bulletproof, so I don't know why people think it sounds bad, because it doesn't. I think I'm not opposed to remixing albums, classic albums. I don't know if Fresh Fruit need it, but I mean, like, this new mix, it's weird to bring a pop guy in. Like, who? It seems like it, like Fresh from a Rotting Vegetable is a very punk sounding record. It's a very raw sounding record. Lord Alge makes very pop process sounding records, and that's what the results sound like. It sounds like you took a Cadillac chassis and then tried to put like a pickup truck on it. It doesn't work. It's a bad plan. And I do think it is a cash grab or just weird. I do think it's interesting that East Bay Ray turned down his guitars. You think he'd turn them up. So I guess maybe East Bay Ray is not a cash grab, and maybe he really does want to remix it. I just think it's a bad shot. I was annoyed that everyone was hating on Jello. I'm like, Jello is totally in the right here. It sounds weird. There's no need to remix it. And he shut out all the band decisions. And honestly, I got to say, it's kind of poor form of Lord Alge, to like remix and not even like talk to Jello about it. It's like, Jello is like, without Jello, there is no Dead Kennedys. I mean, like without the lyrics and even the music written by Jello, there is no Dead Kennedys. So I think it's poor taste for him not to contact you and at least say, hey, Jello, like be a man. Say, listen, Jello, they hired me to do it. I'm going to do it. If you got any ideas, let me know. But this is he didn't even do that. I think that's kind of lame. Lastly, people are like, Jello goes on and on and on. Well, that's what Jello does. That's why Jello is a special person. And if Jello was a normal guy that said, I don't like it, don't buy it, then he wouldn't be Jello anymore. Jello is a magical, wonderful, interesting guy, and his mind is constantly erupting, going seven places at once, and that's why he's able to make such great art. And it annoyed me that people don't appreciate him and his eccentricities for the rare find wonderful person that he is, and instead said, why don't you act like my neighbor who works in accounting? Like that's what people were saying. Like, why don't you act like an accountant, Jello, instead of the greatest punk singer of all time? Hallie Bullitt, agree or disagree?
Neither. I'll because I do agree with you. There'd be no Dead Kennedys without Jello, and he kind of is he is the heart of it. And it is weird that the rest of the band kind of is operating as this separate entity. But I do, reading this statement, and it is very long winded, and it is very Jello. I don't know if he realizes that you're reading it in there. At least for me, there was part of me that was like, this does seem like a person that would be impossible to deal with. And he has allowed his relationship with his other band members to degrade to the point where obviously they feel that they can't even approach him to ask him about stuff or to really collaborate with him. And like, that's a two-way street, you know, that's a two-way street. And you're reading this long-winded statement full of like so many opinions, and I don't know, should they be doing stuff without him? That I'm actually really just totally not sure of. It feels like a bit of a betrayal, but there's something about the statement where you just think, well, this guy might just be so they were in the band and he might just be so hard to deal with that they maybe have been left no choice. I don't know. It made me think many thoughts, and I've now expressed them to you. So that's where I'm at.
Well, I would counter, and that at least it proves that he cares, and he does care. And I would say Jello never does anything out of vindictiveness. He's a handful, and he's a lot to take in. But I think in his heart of hearts, his intentions are true. And also, I would add, anyone that's dealt with East Bay Ray, it's like the Dead Milkman. It's like, oh, Joe Jack Talcum, he's kind of weird. And then you meet Rodney and you're like, no, Joe's the regular one.
Yeah.
So if you deal with East Bay Ray, I mean, that is something else. And more.
Yes.
Where do you stand?
I am 100% team Jello. Like, yeah, the statement's longer, but it's a fun read. I enjoyed reading it. I found out different things that I didn't know. I didn't know all the three remixes that he mentions. I didn't know about those. So that was really cool. And they're on my list of things to check out now. The East Bay Ray's tone down his guitars, his ego, like that whole part, that was just great. It was like, that's perfect. Cause it's true and it's funny and it's great. And it's not mean spirited. So yeah, like John, I agree how it just shows how much he cares and how much the Dead Kennedys mean to him and have meant to him because they're his band. And I really don't understand why everyone else did this. it doesn't make any sense. And it does seem like a cash grab. And it's just like, oh, you want to hear this? Like, let's package this in a way that maybe will appeal to more people and sell more copies. And there we go. I haven't been able to listen to any of the remixes because the videos are not available in Canada. So that's fun. And I'm not going to.
So. Lucky you, Em. Julie, do the Dead Kennedys hold a special place in your heart? And do you enjoy Jello's lengthy screeds, or is it enough already? Be more concise.
I love him. I love Jello. I think everything he says. I love alternative tentacles. I love all that shit. I think he's absolutely right, and he's saying the truth. Long-winded, well, he just has a thought that's not, like, wasn't, you know, synced for like, Instagram or whatever. I think that the main point of this whole situation is get a lawyer, get an operating agreement, and get a good fucking lawyer, because that is not even just his band. That's him. It's him. It's his soul. It's his thoughts. It's his passion. It's his life that was right there. And he signed a bad contract, you know, and he can't, like, outvote anyone. And he has a vision. And yeah, he might be difficult, but that's what artists are. Like, it sounds like to me that they're trying to refresh the thing. That's why people do it. Oh, remember this record and remember this. It's kind of derogatory to say, like, oh, it's better than ever, because it's, you know, I think he's got a point. Like, it sounded the way it sounded, and it was important to sound that way. And it was influential because it sounded this way. And so Rascal Flatts, I mean, when he was, like, saying that, I was like, love that shit. Like, no offense to Linkin Park and Rascal Flatts. Like, what the fuck? No, I don't even want to listen to this. So I would say, like, yeah, he's difficult, but, like, I don't know. Every job has difficult people. And if they were the leader at that time, like, I understand not wanting to engage, but, like, have to, and at least give him the courtesy of, like, an email saying we're gonna do this, and he's gonna rant to you, and, you know, I think they were just trying to make it a smooth road, you know, and then just have this at the end, just kind of like you wanted the interview, you know, or, like, the opposite of how you wanted the interview, but, like, they just wanted to do their thing, hire the guy, and then just hear it all at the end, which I understand.
I'll say for the record, I think it's cool to have a pop guy take a crack at it. Why not? It's a punk record. It's been remixed before. Like, why, if you're going to do it again, like, why not? Like, yeah, like, let a pop guy take a crack at it. I think that's interesting.
Those records don't sound good, in my opinion. That's why. Like, to me, doesn't sound good, because it doesn't sound real. So, like, those things are for radio. It is why not, because it's a different kind of art, but it's like having, like, Harry Styles sing the songs now. It's like, well, yeah, it would be interesting.
I would love that. Why not?
God, no. I'm just, like, on the other side of that. It doesn't speak to me. It doesn't speak to me as much as the punk part of it.
Well, speak of weird cultural clashes, here's another weird cultural clash. I don't know if there's a whole lot of that to say, but let's see here. Jason Van Tatenhove, who was the spokesperson for the Oath Keepers until about 2016, testified as part of the January 6th hearing. Of course, the Oath Keepers are Proud Boys, but even worse, they're a far-right paramilitary group that are racist and sexist and all that stuff. And they had this guy testify as part of the January 6th hearings, I guess against, or to give information as to why the people that stormed federal buildings are bad and so forth. The weird thing was he wore a Descendants shirt, which is weird for multiple reasons. First of all, I recognize the guy's not an Oath Keeper anymore, but even so, it's so weird that, like, when far right people are just like, meet people like wear like far right people wear like a Dead Kennedy shirt or a Clash shirt. It's like, did you, like, not engage with this art at all? Second, I have to say, why didn't his attorney be like, don't wear? I mean, listen, any attorney knows you never want your client to wear anything with any words on it ever, because it can be interpreted in any weird way. So why didn't his attorney be like, let's not wear a punk rock t-shirt at one of the most important hearings in all of American legal history, you know?
Yeah.
And third of all, I got to say, man, I was, and we hit this button a lot, but I was so skeeved out. How many commenters were like, he's not actually a bad guy.
Oh, you know, don't God. Love this guy. Oh, like, worse.
And then meanwhile, we're going to talk about Pussy Riot in a minute. And they're like, Pussy Riot sucks. It's like, Pussy, you know, Pussy Riot, the band that are fighting oppression in Russia, or if not fighting, then, you know, working against this guy who was a far right extremist. They're like, he's all right. He's an all right guy. You know, he made a mistake. You know, I'm like, it really does skeeve me out, and it really does make me question whether or not we should have the comment section at Punk News anymore. Like, yes. Like, does it solve? Yeah. It does it have any point whatsoever? And more, is there anything to add to this, or is this just a weird situation? And what's going through this dude's head?
Okay, well, first of all, I had the comment thing like all like set to go, because it's like, really, you guys are defending this like fucking terrorist. And you're not giving anybody like who isn't a white man a listen, like, really? Okay.
I'll add that he's a white man with a beard and denim, just like your Large Lawrence Arms fan. I'll add that. We'll go ahead.
Enjoys a good beer, probably. That whole thing. Whiskey and friendship. It confused me, because it's like, why are you wearing a Descendants t-shirt? They're not even like, They released That's the Breaks, the anti-Trump song. They're not on your side. They never were on your side. So why are you doing this? It's like, is this an appeal to punks somehow? Is he trying to do like subliminal messaging? Like, I'm one of you guys, look at me, I'm normal, all this kind of, or I'm an outsider and I'm this and I'm that, and I'm a good guy at the heart of things, which I think is what got through to some of the commenters. Maybe. That's giving them the benefit of the doubt. But anyway, I think it was some sort of mind game that was going on. I'm glad the Descendants came out and were like, we don't agree with this, because you have to say something, and their statement was good. But
oh, yeah, I should add, the Descendants said right away, like, we don't agree with any Oathkeepers, and we don't agree with any of this. Julie, were you as shocked as the rest of us?
Dude, it was so rude. It's like so rude to drag them into this shit. Like, I was thinking, like, what if one of them was wearing like a coat hanger shirt, which they would never would, but I would be like, I wanted to rip through the screen and like take it off of him. That's rude. And it seems like a publicity thing. And it's just like, you know, like some kind of, weird statement, but the statement is like, fuck off. Get either. He's like, no.
Yeah, no, I had the same instinct of like, get that off your fucking body. That's ours. That's not yours.
Yeah.
You know? And like, and then I said to my husband, I was like, I cannot wait. I was like, I cannot wait for this scumbag to get torn a new asshole by his favorite band. Cause I thought that the Descendants would be like, come out with a stronger statement. I thought their statement was fine. It got the job done. And they're clearly just don't want any fucking part of it. And I appreciate that. But like, I really kind of wish they had dug in a little bit harder. I'm not disappointed, but just me personally, and the commenters just, how baffling. I mean, it's like, okay, so he was an Oathkeeper and now he's disavowing that, but you're ignoring the part where he was a fucking Trump supporter after 4 years of bullshit and racism and the most like horrifying fucking behavior. Like, he's at the fucking Capitol being like, yeah, I got to support this guy. Like, that's a fucking dummy. Fuck that guy. He's not a punk. Did he ever? And I'm with you, John. Did he ever listen to the Descendants? But then you listen, you look at the comment section and you're like, that there is that.
It works.
There is that faction of punk where you're like, how is there this like punk to fucking QAnon pipeline? Like, what is this? Like, but it clearly exists, you know? Disappointing.
Sorry. Here's something that's not disappointing. The new Tegan and Sarah single. It's great. It's called Yellow. It's on their upcoming album. Finally, even though I recognize that Tegan and Sarah don't exist to satisfy my artistic requests, they are satisfying my artistic requests and are putting out something that's kind of between So Jealous and The Con and the one after that, which was called Heartthrob or something like that. Anyway, their three best albums. The new track is called Yellow. And the new album is called Cry Baby. And I dug the new track a lot. I thought it was kind of like the con. And then I'm going to play a little too cute for myself. I saw the cover of Cry Baby. I'm like, I've seen that cover before. And I'm like, that's the cover of the Softies, the band that recorded Jet Boy, Jet Girl with Captain Sensible. The cover of Softie is an ice cream, a soft serve ice cream cone with a razor blade sticking out of it to the left. Whereas the Softies cover is a hard ice cream cone with a razor blade sticking out of the right. Hallie Blitt, did you enjoy the track? And is this a quinky dink, or are the Softies the long lost, forgotten, okay punk band being ripped off?
I don't know. I didn't make that connection, but you're really good at that. You're really, really good at that. You're always like, wait a minute, I've seen this before. No, I just like, I love them. I love that they're still making stuff. I think they're cool. I listened to an interview with them. They did an interview on the podcast that Jenny Eliscu does. Do you guys know her? She's like a Sirius XM DJ, just like great, like female musical mind. I like her a lot. And so, yeah, if you're, they talked a lot about like their process now. And I like that they still make stuff, and they clearly are always trying to push themselves and, you know, stay true to who they are, but try something new. I admire them.
Julie, are you a Tegan and Sarah fan, or not a fan, or ambivalent?
I'm a little ambivalent. It's not anything I've ever dug into, but I read, you know, about their process, and I think it's really interesting for the growth to keep going.
Did you see my side-by-side album cover with the Softies album cover comparison?
I did. I doubt that they were aware, but... it is a very, very keen eye you've got there for comparisons.
The question is, should I post this online and potentially cause them a lot of trouble? Or is it just maybe an odd, like, two, you know, the same people can have two ideas, you know, separately. Like I like Tegan and Sarah, so I don't want to throw a rock in the bridge. You know, that doesn't make any sense. I don't want to. Emmore, is it a ripoff? Is it a ripoff or a coincidence?
I think it's a hidden, it's a hint of
Tegan and Sarah
showing their punk roots. Yeah, yeah.
You think
so? Yeah, they're showing their punk roots somehow. Yes. I think there's something there. Yeah, it was so good. Yeah, I really liked it. It was nice. It was good. And I'm excited for the album.
Okay, well, let's hit two more quick stories, or maybe one quick story and then one semi-quick story. And it's all right if we extend the last. Well, it's all right if we extend any story. But listen, the Chats, they put out another single. Of course, the Chats blew up about 2 or 3 years ago, and they've been blowing up ever since. The new single is called I've Been Drunk in Every Pub in Brisbane. And surprisingly to me, well, it's off their upcoming album. The upcoming album is called Get Fucked. That's out August 19th. Surprisingly to me, it's more lo-fi than their last album. And the EP before that, it's almost as if the Chats are going sort of like making like a Burger Records kind of sound, like the 2015. I was really surprised that the sound was lo-fi. The video has them, you know, just drinking around different bars and getting drunk in bars in Brisbane, which I enjoyed. I like the Chats a lot. I don't love the Chats. I like the Chats. My question that I had here is, I saw a quote a little while ago. It's like, satire needs to be pointed and precise, lest it be mistaken for supporting the thing that it critiques. And when the Chats first started, like, I thought they were like kind of making fun of, like, just being like, you know, bros and, you know, like knuckleheads, you know, kind of like, even like AC/DC has songs about drinking and fighting, and it's kind of supposed to be funny. Like TNT is kind of a funny song, you know, or Back in Black's even kind of a funny song. And then I saw the Chats a couple of times, and you can never blame a band for their audience. Sublime is one of the greatest bands ever. Their audience is pretty rough. I saw the Chats 2 times. It was bro-o-mania. It was frat house-o-mania. Like, I was really, I'm like, wow. I'm back in the frat house. And so the fact is, though, I saw this video. I dug the video. I dug the song. But I'm like, are they now just saluting bro culture and saying it's rad? Or are they still kind of, you know, poking sticks at it a little bit? Ed Moore, what do you think?
That's interesting. I didn't come at it from that angle, but now it's kind of like, it makes sense, because when they're drinking and stuff, they're doing the things that people typically do, or you see in movies, like the guitarist, he has his shirt off like half the time and is like going woo and all that. And I've never seen anyone do that in real life. but I don't know. And then feeding the giraffe and I think it was a cow, like the statues, the beer and stuff. Like the video is really funny and I like the video. So maybe they are kind of being like, oh yes, we are this, but we're going to try to put little like digs into it and make it more satire, more art than maybe this is who we are. But that's kind of where I get the other side of it, where they kind of look like people who would do that and who would say that unironically and everything. So I find it kind of hard to see. I think it's probably a mix of both. I think it's, they have themselves that has an element of that, and then they're exaggerating it to make it more fun, I guess. When I think the chats, I really do think like the AC/DC comparison, because it's everything they put out is usually the same and is usually good to decent. So like, that's kind of that.
Hallie Bullitt, are the chats getting caught up in the Beastie Boys License to Ill quagmire, and that they are ridiculing frat bros and so forth, and therein become them to their core, and then have to decompose themselves with a radically challenging hip hop record that breaks many rules and could not be made today due to sampling rights issues? Go ahead, Hallie Bullitt. Are the chats the new Beastie Boys?
Maybe I need to take a closer look at it. This did just seem like a little bro-y. It did seem like a little bro-y, right? And not ironically bro-y, you know? And I like the chats a lot, but this wasn't my favorite chat song. I wonder, like, what you're saying. Is it like, if you satirize, if you play a character long enough, do you just like become that character? I don't know, but I like the chats. And I did like the lo-fi sound. And I just think maybe this wasn't like, this wasn't the single for me. I'm like looking forward to hearing what else they have coming up.
Hallie Bullitt's comment goes directly to Julia's new album, Loss of Self-Identity and Figuring Out Who You Are. Julia, with your background, do you think the chats are losing their own identity and are trying to figure out who they are?
I think that to my interpretation or perception of it is that they're being pretty true to themselves. Mm. To me, it doesn't seem like satire. Like, I feel like I know those people. You know, like, I spend the majority of my life in the coat hangers with those guys, and I've seen people take their shirts off all the time. And they never feel like that. And they probably think the video is hilarious. And I think that it does fall into that weird sublime thing where, like, the fans, because they like the simplicity of it. Like, I love simple, like, party punk rock sort of vibes. And I like the lo-fi sound, too. It's not groundbreaking, but it's a good time. It kind of makes you want to drink a beer with them or whatever. And I think that's where the bros are digging into that, especially. I mean, Australia, though, it's full of bros.
Yeah.
A lot. They're speaking to their people. So I feel like that's kind of what's charming about it. It feels to me genuine. Like, it doesn't feel like they're playing a role. So I give it a thumbs up.
Well, there you have it. one last story, and then we'll wrap up tonight's episode. Pussy Riot are releasing a mixtape. The mixtape is called Matriarchy Now. It's out August 5 via Neon Gold Records. It's got a lot of, I would say, semi-big or big guest stars. It's got I Love McConan, but it also has Slater and, a Punk News favorite, Big Frida, is on the last track. They released a video for the lead single. It's called Plastic, and it features, of course, I Love McConan on it. The commenters hated it. They absolutely hated it, which again goes back to the whole Descendants guy. And I'm like, you're hating this, but you're loving the Descendants. Well, not the Descendants guy, the guy wearing a Descendants shirt. Yeah. So I didn't love the song. I like the song. I think Pussy Riot in general is really cool and really interesting. The question that I had is, this video seems extremely expensive and extremely well done. So is Pussy Riot backed by like a major label? And if so, does that get in the way of the purity? Or is it a Chumbawamba type thing where the major label lets them kind of expand their grasp and achieve more when they have some real cash behind them? And is that all irrelevant compared to, or is this just a video? Julia, what do you think of Pussy Riot? What do you think of the video? Am I thinking too deeply about this one single?
No, I think that it triggered a lot of thoughts in me. Because we did a Pussy Riot cover at one point with Trail of Dead called Putin Lights Up the Fires. And it was very, it was like very sort of subversive feeling and dangerous. I can't say that I got that feeling from this particular song or video. It didn't feel subversive or dangerous to me. So, but you know, it's, it does feel like there's an art statement. So that's, I support that. And that's, I think that's all I've got to say. I don't know, as far, major labels are probably looking at it and thinking this is marketable, you know, like whatever they're doing it in the way that they're doing it. It never hurts. It's just like they may not have full control. That's what I found. The more money is involved, the less control you have over your art, but maybe they're playing it in a different way. You know, the rules are changing a bit. I'm not sure. Are they like coming out of Russia? Or are they based in the U.S.? Because
I don't think anybody knows at this point, honestly. I mean, okay. They were originally Russia, right? Weren't they?
Yeah.
I'm not. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I don't even know about now. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. I don't know.
Hallie Bullock, did you enjoy the Hot Topic style dress in the video? Which is, to my astounding, my amazement, is making a comeback over the past year or so. Everyone's dressed like a, I was out in Philadelphia last Saturday at the punk rock flea market selling records, and I saw so many people dressed Hot Topic circa 2004. I couldn't believe it. I like Hallie Bullock. Are you pro? You know those big Marilyn Manson boot things people wear, and the, you know, the Cupid doll dresses. Like, do you think that's cool?
I mean. No, but I, you know, I had fun dressing like that for a time. So if younger people want to, like, have your fun, do it. Fucking yeah. Dress how you want. I feel like I should have done a little bit more homework on this. Hold on. I'm looking at the lyrics really quickly.
Well, how's it look at the lyrics? I tried to interpret the lyrics, and at one point I'm like, is this just kind of like a hookup song? Or is the singer saying that as a woman, she's being objectified and treated as an object? And in which case, then, what does it mean in the video that she is totally being an object? And it brings back the question we had with the chats is, if you exist as a satire or something so much, can you become that thing? I realize I'm being very heady here, but I'm just treading water while Hallie Bullock squints at the computer and reads lyrics. And more. Well, go ahead, Hallie, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know. I should spend more time with this before I make have a big, big opinion about it. I like Pussy Riot a lot. I thought the video, I thought it was interesting and definitely it looked nice. I don't love I don't know. It seems to me that the song is very critical of, like, I could be misinterpreting, or it feels like it's being critical of, like, maybe shallow women, or, you know, women that put appearances before. I don't know. It's just not my favorite song topic. Like, I just think there are, like, other things in the world to be pissed off about than, like, other women and whether they want to get their nails done and with, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm misinterpreting, but I don't know. Pussy Riot's cool. This wasn't my favorite song.
And more, final word on Pussy Riot.
Yeah, I took the song as, like, with the video kind of like subverting what is expected of like women in the society that we live in and stuff. That's what I took from it. I really like Pussy Riot. Their last EP last year, Panic Attack, they started going more in like the electronic poppy direction. I like the song, but I thought it was like really toned down, because have you guys heard Sexist? That's off the Panic Attack EP, and it's featuring Hoffminita, I think is how you say her name, and it's in Russian, and it's just like bam. It's like like, it, basically, you're a sexist, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to rip your dick off and write whatever in your blood. And this was a huge kind of tone down. So, yeah, I think they're definitely going for a more marketable approach, maybe just to get their name out, or not their name, their name's already out there, but to get the statements they're making with their art out there more, because I think that maybe this is just dipping their toe in a pool, and the next thing they release is going to be more pointed, maybe.
Yeah, like trying to have a wider impact. You might be right. It might be more a critique of what is expected of women rather than a critique of the actual women who are maybe trying to embody that. I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, it's interesting that we're talking about it this much, right? They obviously did something cool.
Yeah, well, for sure.
Well, there you have it. They've done something cool, I think, is the consensus. Anyway, Julia, thank you for hanging out with us for the extended stay.
Thanks, Julia.
Thanks so much.
It has been a pleasure to have you on with us. I'm very excited about the new album. Again, the new album is out September 30 via Suicide Squeeze. You can pre-order right now. And I think there's some limited color vinyl options, which you should order because coat hangers and Julia's stuff always sells out, especially the limited ones. So snatch those on up. The new record is called Derealization by Julia. And Julia, thanks for being on the show. Any last things that you would like the listeners to know or to check out or anything like that?
If you live in Long Beach, we put on a festival called Happy Sundays. It's free and it's happening August 28th. So LA area people, if any of you want to come to Long Beach, it's really rad. I don't know, just write down your feelings and drink a lot of water. How about that?
Wise words from Julia. And we are going to wrap up this episode with one of her other bands, Soft Palms. This is Bone Dry, and we will see you all next week. Julie, thanks again.
Thank you.